Hello and welcome to episode 3 of the APW. In this episode, we talk to Cancer Bats riff god and now producer Scott Middleton. We go deep on all things mics, rigs, guitars, preamps, best practice, Ross Robinson, and all the great stuff he's producing now. If you want to know more about sessions, rig rundowns, reviews, extended interviews, please head over to theaudioproductionworkshop.com. Welcome to the Audio Production Workshop. I'm here with Scotty Middleton from Cancer Bats and now producer.
Yes.
Is this correct?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Chris.
Oh, absolutely lovely having you here. Now, let's start from the beginning. Now, you've always had an urge to record. Didn't you do your first, like, Cancer Bats EPs? Was that the vibe?
Yeah, exactly. Like, so basically, when I was a bit younger, I remember being in high school and I watched, like, the, I don't know if you remember the like VHS cassette that Metallica put out, like this home video called A Year and a Half in the Life of Metallica.
Yes, it's basically I do remember this.
Documentary of making the Black Album, which I just loved and I watched a thousand times. And I was just like, this is so cool. And I always wanted to just, you know, one day be in a studio. And as I started bands, of course you get that chance. But like, I thought, hey, like, because I never thought I could be a professional musician. It just seemed like that was an unattainable thing for me. And everyone told me, you know, that would be a waste of my time. So then I thought, okay, well, I'm finishing high school. I need a career. I want to be an audio engineer. That sounds really cool. I'll record bands. Yeah, great. I had moved to a flat in Toronto, and around the corner, I noticed this recording school had just opened up. And then I was just like, okay, this is it. I don't care what anyone says. This is what I'm doing. I have to do this. And I spent a couple years going to recording school. And that like massively changed my life, because I learned so much from, you know, a guy who was like, he kind of got like famous in the Canadian recording world. This guy Daryl Newdorf, who he recorded like the, if you know who Sarah McLachlan is, she's like massive Canadian. He did like her first record, helped her write it, and you know, has since gone on to work with like Nico Case.
I've recorded Nico.
Exactly. And he's produced, I think, like most of her records. And so anyways, he was like a great guy, a great musician, and like taught me a lot. And it was really cool to kind of go to school for the first time and like wake up thinking, I want to be at school, which had never happened in my life, where like I didn't really, you know, it's just it's normal, right? It's like, especially for musicians, you want to just be home playing guitar, hanging out with your buddies, and, you know, pretending you're rock stars. But
when did the move into mainly more Cancer Bats then kind of pick up then? When did that take you away from that?
Okay, well, basically, like, at that time I was in recording school, I was in this sort of, like, death metal, hardcore, black metal-influenced band called At the Mercy of Inspiration. We didn't all see eye to eye in the band, and things started kind of crumbling away. And during all this, I was, like, going to recording school, and I'm like, oh, yeah. Like, I was really excited, because going to recording school, I just could see, it was like, this will make me a better musician as well.
Yes.
I'm just going to learn more about music. Awesome. You know, and kind of near the end of that, I had just started Cancer Bats, and Cancer Bats was just, like, kind of a fun side project, because Liam and I were old friends. And we always joked about starting a band. And then one day I went to visit him when he was living in Montreal, took the train up, and I brought a guitar. And we wrote a bunch of songs together, him on drums. And that was kind of the start of the band. And basically, at the end of my recording course, they offered all the students, like, some free studio time at the studio at the school. And I was like, oh, this is perfect. My other band isn't really doing much, because we were all sort of like, a couple guys had quit, and you know, we were just kind of in disarray at that moment. And Liam and I were really excited about our new band, and we were like, okay, let's record a demo. And I was like, yeah, perfect, I'll do it. I've got access to the studio. And then, I mean, the thing is that, like, the reason I didn't keep on recording was because basically that demo got us signed within like a month.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I listen back and it's like, obviously, I laugh at, you know, the engineering work that I did and the decisions I made, but, you know, it kind of proved to me, it's like, the songs were cool, the energy was there, And we believed in it so, like, 1,000%. We were just like, this is great. It put smiles on our faces. And I bumped into the guy that ran our old record label in Canada, this guy Greg, who ran Distort Records, passed him the CD. And he was like, oh, cool, thanks. Yeah, I'll check it out. And then, like, a couple days later, at my job where I, like, sold train tickets at a train station, somehow he had found out the number to where I worked and called and was just like, is this Scott? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, hey, it's Greg from Distort. I can't stop fucking listening to this, man. This is brilliant. Like, it's all that's been in my car for the last week. I'm freaking out. Like, when can I see you play? And then it just kind of went from there. He, like, just absolutely loved our band and believed in it. And then it was just that took me on this ride of being, you know, a professional musician.
One of the things I've noticed is, especially on, like, the first few Cancer Bat albums, you're working with the same producer, like, was it Eric
Ratz
and Kenny Long as well. He's started doing a lot of engineering and helping out a lot.
Exactly, yeah.
Was it all in Vesper Studios? Was that the majority?
Well, yeah.
Or was it a little bit of Vesper, a little bit more Metalworks? This is all, like, studios.
Yeah, okay. So basically, like, our first record, Birthing the Giant, the guy who produced it was this guy, Gavin Brown. So he's responsible for, like, the first two Billy Talent records. I'm trying to think of other stuff that you might know. But there's, like, Canadian bands like 3 Days Grace. He's worked with Metric and Tragically Hip. And he's worked with all these, like, really well-known Canadian bands. And he was the guy that basically hired, like, Kenny was, like, his editor at the time, and Ratz was his engineer.
Right.
And he produced it and, you know, worked massively on the songs, and he helped us a ton with learning how to write songs.
Yeah.
You know, and he's a bit of, like, a almost like a Rick Rubin kind of guy, very much has that vibe about him. And he just really taught us how to be better songwriters more than anything.
Brilliant.
And, you know, and that was really valuable. But the thing was, I think we had this really excellent personal connection with Kenny and Ratz because, you know, they were the guys, like, in there with the studio, like, really showing us how to be better musicians in a lot of ways. Not that Gavin wasn't, but at the time he was also working on another Canadian band. And so he would kind of be, like, in and out of the studio and be like, okay, cool. So here's what you guys are doing today. I'm going to go check on this other record I'm making simultaneously.
Yeah.
And okay, so
you know, I have known producers to do that. Sure. They're all dipping out.
And I mean, for us, that wasn't necessarily ideal, but we just kind of, like, went with it. And that was that. And, you know, and then that allowed us to really get this bond with Eric and Kenny. And so when it came time to do the second record and we were, like, trying to figure out who would produce it, we just kind of started talking to Ratz. We're like, hey, man, like, we loved working with you and Kenny. Can we do this again, but just us?
Yeah.
You know? And he was like, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, I'd love to. And it was cool because, like, we weren't sure if, like, you know, some guys are just strictly engineers.
Yeah.
And he was like, no, I'd love to produce it. And then so we went and did Hail Destroyer with just the two of them. And it was also interesting, too, because our original bass player, Andrew, he had quit the band because he wanted to pursue a career in graphic design.
Did you play all the parts on that album?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, on the first album, too. It was just like, you know, the producer kind of made the decision. He's like, listen, Scott can get the better result, and I ended up playing it. And it's like, no disservice to him. It's just Andrew, like, in, you know, much the reason he left the band, he literally said, he's like, it's not my dream to be a professional musician. He's like, I love playing and playing with you guys because you're my friends and it's fun. But, like, he's like, I started a graphic design company. That's really what I want to do. And you have to respect that.
Yeah. I also think making those decisions in a studio, especially when things are so raw and really obvious as well, you have to go with what is there to get things moving because you can get so stagnant.
Well, for sure. Sometimes. And I mean, and that's how you run out of budget.
Yeah.
Because you're like, oh, I mean, this is all the stuff that, like, learning along the way, it's like we weren't prepared. Like, we went in to the studio before we were really ready, you know, like unfinished lyrics. Certain people didn't quite know the parts like they thought they should.
So has that changed now?
Like, absolutely. These
pre-production, get it down, and then go.
Yeah, like, we're making, like, 10 rounds of demos now.
Yeah.
You know, like, on our last record, we were demoing for like 7 months or something.
Okay.
You know, and because we want to be so prepared, and we'll do revisions, and, you know, Liam will come up with like alternate lyrics to a song, and we'll see if we like it, and, you know, writing guitar solos, deleting those solos, adding new ones, you know, fills, like arrangements that we just try over and over. And it's just, but you get that with experience. I mean, everybody, it's just like, when they start their first bands, they're just like, oh, I just want to record.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but you don't know everything you need to know to figure out to do it properly. And those are the things that, like, as we went on, you know, Rats and Kenny noticed that about us, and like, listen, we got to do some like real serious pre-production. And they would come in and make demos with us, and we would go over the stuff. And it was cool because we didn't do that on the first record. And it made such a difference in improving everything, because now, you know, Liam had these solid demos to like sit and write lyrics to. You know, we could sit there and figure out the parts. You know, there were still things that like we should have ironed out better, whether it was like what tempos we were playing the songs at, and, you know, if we could have maybe arranged something better, or if something was, it's just like, it's all hindsight now, and, and whatever. I'm proud of everything we've done regardless, but I learned so much from those experiences along the way that's what I, you know, I'm always teaching bands I'm working with now, where I'm just like, okay, listen, we're not stepping a foot into the studio until you know what you're playing. Because especially these days, it's like the budgets are so much smaller to like make records, you know, compared to like even, you know, when we were starting out, like, you know, 10, 12 years ago, making our first records. And it's like, there's no way you can waste that time. So I'm always just like really like drilling the bands that I work with. Okay, I need to know exactly what you're singing and when.
Yeah.
Or if we don't know that, that means we take a break in the middle of recording.
Go sort
and of we don't do vocals until you absolutely know what the plan is, right?
So. Now, obviously moving into producer world that you are doing. With your producer mindset, obviously you work with Rats, Kenny, and obviously Ross Robinson.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
What do you feel you've picked up from them and kind of tweaked it to your advantage for when you do step in the studio? What things are you kind of making sure that you're...
I mean, I think like, you know, if I go back to starting with Gavin, early guy, songwriting from that guy, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, when it comes to Kenny and Rats, massively how to make things sound great with engineering techniques and attention to detail. And problem solving, and like really how to nail killer tones, and like kind of seeing what works and why it doesn't in some cases, and like how that can affect the whole vibe of the overall project, and really like hardworking diligence. Like those guys, I have so much respect for, because they just like crush in the studio. Like they'll work crazy hours and get the project done on time, and with just like consistent results. And that's the thing, consistency from those guys is something like I'm always striving to like, you know, match what I've seen pros like them do. And then Ross is this whole other enigma. He's the wild card in the, you know, the hot sauce that you pour on top of a meal that ties everything together, you know.
Yeah.
It's just, he's just the most organic producer, you know, music maker that I've ever met. Everything from him stems around emotion and instinct and spontaneity, and this like, you know, he kind of talks about it like it's like this molten fire inside of people. It's like his thing. And I love that. It is like, it completely working with him blew open all my concepts of what making a record could be, should be, shouldn't be. And more than anything, like from him, it's like, I love like the spontaneous decisions he would make that would like change something completely and always for the better. Any suggestion he had for us, it was just like, what? And then we'd try it and it would blow my mind. It'd be so cool. And he really made us feel great and put this confidence in I shouldn't even say confidence. Fearlessness mm-hmm. is kind of what I've learned. It's just like, we can try anything. Mm. And that's what this is. It's art. It's this open slate. You can put it down. And like, I think even more than all of that, it's like, he really provided this fun experience for our band. And it was like the least boring or tedious recording I've ever done. It was just exciting because I never knew what was going to happen.
You got things thrown at you, didn't you?
Yeah, I had absolutely had things thrown at me. But, you know, it got the result that, you know, he was looking for. And I mean, that's his thing. But when he throws things, it's like, it's not because he like hates you or something, or he's like, is trying to hurt you. He's trying to like, he's trying to make you laugh and open up and not be in like, you know, because it's like, a guy like him, he's working with strangers a lot, like, you know, and he definitely was with us. And it's like, he got us to loosen up. Mm. And I think like, I've never had so much fun making an album. Like, we were always doing something the way he would like, you know, like once we finish drums and we like, so we record drums, the entire band is in the room with Mikey slamming away. Mm. And you know, rather than being like, maybe, hey, like I would previously record a guide track to a click and then Mikey plays to the guide track and the rest of us are sitting around doing nothing.
Yeah.
It's like, no, he got us involved.
Have you cherry picked that now in your kind of, do you love doing that?
Absolutely.
I think I've seen a couple of pictures of you being in with bands.
It's such an important thing for me. Like, you know, everybody's different and there's some people that work better alone with a metronome or alone without a metronome, whatever, you know, or with just like one person. You kind of have to feel it from band to band. But I find like 80% of the time, I can go in a room of any size that can fit like a drum kit and like three other guys and have the band playing, because this is why a band exists, is to play together.
Yeah.
And it's them in their natural element. And I'm like pushing for that because I see it in these drummers that like, again, about 80% of drummers feel weird just by themselves with a click track or like a weird sterile kind of strange sounding guide. And they're like in headphones and they just like, they're kind of panicking and they're frustrated. And I've had so many drummers now just say like, Scott, thank you. Like I've never had so much fun recording my drums ever. Usually I fear it like nothing else. Mm. And you've made this like a fun experience for me. And I mean, that feels great.
Yeah.
And I mean, and that's directly from Ross, like, because he gave that where I was like, man, I haven't enjoyed recording as much as I did since the first time I recorded.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't like this tedious process, predictable in that way. And whatever, that doesn't matter because that's just his way. That doesn't mean another way of doing it is wrong. Obviously, like if you pay attention to every detail, you're going to get a pretty good sounding record if the engineer knows what he's doing, you know?
Yeah.
And, but this is like, you know, and I've teamed up with other engineers who are like, kind of like, you're going to do this? And then they're like, I don't know. And then what'll happen is like, you know, we'll do a couple of takes without it. And we'll just see if like the tempo's right. And then, you know, if there's a click or whatever, and that the band gets the feel. Mm-hmm. And then I'll go in the room and I'm going to like, there I am like moshing and circle pitting and like trying to give like, I'm kind of like a conductor in the room trying to like egg the guy on and do like exciting things. You know, just sort of like rather give him energy and get an exciting performance. And
you're the hype man.
Yeah, I'm the hype man. I'm Flava Flav. And so, you know, but then I turn around and like, I look at my engineer buddy and he's just like, oh man, that was so much better than when you weren't in the room. And it's cool.
It does make a difference.
Yeah, it really does. And it's like, it makes people feel comfortable because it's the same thing. It's like, I know it because like performing around the world, if we play in front of a stiff audience and they're just kind of standing there looking at us, you kind of feel a bit weird. And then you, I don't know, play something that convinces them and the room goes off and they start dancing or people start moving around a bit, then you loosen up and you start playing more confidently. And you stop thinking about things like metronomes and like, oh, am I going to screw this up? You just feel the song and the music and it's that excitement and it's like, again, so much of that is from what Ross taught us because I think, wow, I've never seen my own drummer be so stoked about making a recording before. And it was the most enjoyable for him and the whole band. And like, right. And then we would continue when we would have to do like guitars, bass, vocals, it wouldn't be like, here's guitar week. It would be like, okay, do this song, guitars, next, bass, vocals. And like,
everyone's in on the day.
Everyone's involved. You have like, you felt like you put in a shift. Yeah. And then after, you could go chill out. I mean, Ross is on right Venice on the beach. Yeah, literally open the door, beach. And you're like, okay, this is all right. I can chill out.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then you look forward to tomorrow and the work you do. And you can, you know, maybe think of ideas. And Ross will destroy those and make something even more incredible. And it's, you know, yeah. But that's super inspiring. And I think, like, me becoming producer, like, Ross gave me even more confidence in that, like, all the things that I feel about music that are just intrinsic and just, you know, a part of me.
Have you moved into, like, gearhead at all?
Massively, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so, maybe too much sometimes.
So I will go over your rig, your guitar rig, because I think it's always great to touch on that. I've seen your guitar rig evolve over the years as well when I've recorded you. So recording-wise, what's kind of really floating your boat at the moment? Because I notice, obviously, with the stuff at Vesper and even Metalworks, that's all G-series kind of SSL boards.
For sure.
What was Ross doing?
Ross doesn't have a console.
It doesn't have a console. It's just
No. Yeah, he's got, like, Orion converters. Antelope Orion converters. And, like, it's just all, like, Neves, Chandlers, Brent Avril stuff.
So for you and your personal stuff, are there specific studios you go for now that you're kind of looking at just because of the consoles, or you kind of like, actually, it doesn't really matter so much?
I mean, I think that's one of the things that I've kind of learned. The console is less important to me.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Because, like, I don't need an SSL to track a record. I mean, yeah, of course it's nice.
Yeah.
But I mean, I would rather have a nice rack of Neve Pre's than that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, one of the last records I did was for this band called Lawless Sons. And we went to this great studio in Toronto called Union, and they have this, like, vintage Neve console. And it's great because it's actually quite bare bones. You know, it's not really the kind of thing that they mix on necessarily. And it's got good pre's. And the front end is nice.
Has it got EQs on it as well?
Yeah. It's a lot of 1073s I think there's maybe some 1081s in there. And I mean, they have full racks of outboard there, you know, the distressors and, you know, API stuff. Like, I mean, all that's great. I mean, that for me, so much more than that stuff is kind of the room.
Yeah.
And if you feel good being in it and if it lends itself to a good performance and a good drum sound, like, I mean, that's why I'm like renting out a studio.
Yeah.
9 times out of 10 is to get drums down.
Yeah.
Cause I feel like I can kind of do vocals and guitars nearly anywhere. Like, I mean, I could come into a small studio and be happy with that. The result, like, I can get good stuff. But I'm always looking for, like, okay, can I fit me in the whole band? Can I get everybody, like, if I want to track guitars or something live, depending on the thing, like something like that Deck Piss record where we're like trying to record some of the other instruments live. It's important to me that, you know, the studio be able to accommodate that.
Yeah.
But the console's not everything to me, because I'll go to a smaller studio that doesn't have a console and they just, you know, they've got some Neve, some APIs.
Mm-hmm.
I bring my stuff that I own. And
what stuff do you own?
I've got I mean, like I said, I got the Thermionic Culture stuff. I've got actually have the Slate Quad Fox preamps. It's basically like, so it's they're supposedly like to be able to sound somewhere between a Neve, a Millennia, and an API.
Yeah, okay.
It's switching a bunch of transformers and it just sounds nice. It's pretty good. It's thick sounding and I like it. So it really works on some stuff. I've got some Black Lion
The clocks on those Black Lions are really good.
Yeah, I actually don't have their clocks. I just have some of the preamps that they've come out with. Like, they have like an Even and API clone that I've got, and I enjoy those. And I mean, I like them also because they're portable and because I do a lot of like fly-in producing stuff.
Yeah.
And if I don't know what the studio has, I'm like, okay, well, I've got a pre that I can put in my carry-on and I can rely on this. I know what the predictable result if I need to record a guitar or vocal, what I'm going to get. You know, I really like using the Rupert Neve DI box that they came out with. I've got a Rupert Neve 5043 compressor. It's like a dual compressor. Sounds great on vocals. I've got a lot of the Kush audio stuff. Like I got a pair of tweakers and Electro EQ, Clairphonic. I really like the Alesia stuff, their EQs, the X filter and, the envelope, which is more like a transient designer. Sounds awesome. You know, I kind of like I think I went a little overboard on some compressing that, like, I bought more than what I would need in certain situations and stuff like that. Because also like I'm not always doing the mixing. It depends on the project and budgets and stuff like that. And, so I, you know, I've kind of been learning a lot in that way where I'm like, okay, I kind of need more on the front end of things. Better mics, better compressors. Sorry, not better. Better mic pre's is what I mean to say. and EQs because I like kind of, I love EQing on the way in because I'm a guitar guy. It's like I do that every time I plug into an amp. I'm getting the tone. Now, I'm not like, because the thing is like, mixing in the box or something like that, there's just endless possibilities. There's like a million plugins. I kind of like committing myself a little bit so I don't have to think about it as much later. If I can get the mix sounding like 90%, 95% there, I'll be able to sleep better at night.
Yeah, and handing it over to the mix guy as well.
Exactly. Well, and also being like, hey, like this is the sound we want.
Yeah.
This is here. Like, yeah, augment this so it fits with, you know, and has balance. But, like, this is the entire intention of why we put a mic up in front of a cabinet. Because otherwise, record a DI. And you know what I mean? Like, it's almost like that for me, where I'm like, I just really want to carve that guy's sound and be happy with it then and there.
I hear you. Now, talking recording guitars and guitar tones. Now, are you still running Diesel?
Oh, yeah, I love Diesel stuff,
Still running the Diesel. Do you kind of mix it up in the studio?
Oh, for sure. I mean, you know, Diesel's not going to be good for everybody. You know, I have a few different amps in my collection. I have an old 80s Rivera M100 valve head that's great, and then I have, like, this handmade custom head of mine made by a company called Morris Amps, which is sort of out of, like, Niagara Falls, Ontario area, and that guy, like, you know, custom made me an amp from the ground up, and I told him exactly what I wanted, and and it's really versatile. It has a beautiful, clean, just thick mid-range, and it does something that the Diesel can't do, but vice versa, the Diesel is just this all-encompassing rock beast and metal beast that, like, you know, is tight and can cut through the right way. It has a massive bottom if I need it to. Sounds great with down tuning and you know, band like Out of the Ruins, I use like 7-string guitars with, something like that. It's like, you know, it can really accommodate that. And you know, and then, you know, we mix up speaker cabinets to taste and stuff like that. And I, you know, I like getting a blend of usually not more than 3 amps. That would be kind of like the maximum, but usually 2 is probably going to get me the best result, I think, that I'm happy with.
But on stage, you're just dealing with Diesel?
Well,
just for ease? Is that the vibe?
Yes and no. I mean, like, it kind of depends on the situation. Like, when I'm touring in Canada, I'm using my, if we're talking about, like, live situation, like, I'm going to use Diesel, but lately I've been pairing it up, because Jay has this massive bass sound that is almost more guitar-like in some ways. Like
he's running like the Orange AD200.
Yeah, that's his European rig. But but at home he has these old Canadian amps called Trainers.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and then he has like this old Ampeg V4, and so he started running two amps.
Okay.
And then you know he runs all these fuzzes and he's cranking his mids.
Yeah.
So I've got to like kind of compete now, especially as our rigs evolve. So I have been running two heads. Mm-hmm. So I'll do like the Diesel and the Morris together, or the Diesel Rivera. Rivera's kind of somewhere between those two. Mm-hmm. And when we did our last, that run of Bat Sabbath shows, you know, where for people who don't know, we do like a Sabbath cover band for fun sometimes.
Which you have to go and see it because it's absolutely ace.
Thanks, man. Yeah, yeah. And so I brought, because the Rivera is a newer amp for me, and I brought that out on the tour and I just did the whole thing on the Rivera. Mm-hmm. And it really worked. It kind of covered the ground of the vintage and then the Cancer Bats, more modern sort of stuff. So that's fun. You know, like it sort of gives me the extra balls I need to like really push through the stage mix and stuff like that. And
are you still running the Torpedo stuff?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, that's been kind of like a secret studio weapon for me.
I think they're great.
I love it. Absolutely. Like, for me, I'm not a fan of the Kempers and Axe FX's like so many people are. I think those things are useful tools. Like, I mean, I never
have their purpose.
Yeah, I never really like to like, you know, hate on any guitar gear or innovation like that. I mean, that stuff's been around forever. Like, you know, I mean, I've been using like, you know, fake amps since I was a kid with my Boss Multi Effects and just running those like through DIs. Like, I mean, when I was a kid, my first bands, like, I was like, oh, I don't need an amp. I just can plug in this straight front of house. And that, you know, of course, the engineer's cringing and laughing at me and hates me, but whatever. You know, but so when I hear those things, and I don't know if other people notice, but like, I don't care like what model you're really using. If you're playing like a high gain thing through this box, it has a sound. Like it has this tone. And it's like the minute things that it's like, it's something that's not just EQ. There's this tone about the way that it pushes air through a speaker or through PA. And I'm just not the biggest fan of that. I've seen some bands sound phenomenal on it. Mm-hmm. And either they have somebody amazing programming it for them that I think
you're only as good as your programming.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, listen, I saw the band Failure at South by Southwest a couple years ago. And both Ken Andrews and I forget the bass player and his name, but they were both running Axe FX and it sounded incredible. I mean, they're a massively talented band, but I know he's a producer. He's dialed that thing in like crazy. His front of house guy's really good. And then I went and saw another band around the corner use it, and they were some terrible metal band. It was the worst tin can guitar sound I'd ever heard. And I go, okay. I mean, it's the player, you know. We toured with Danzig and Tommy Victor from Prong plays guitar for Danzig. You know, he's got Kemper. I mean, it sounds amazing because he's an amazing guitarist, you know. It's the source going in. But I'll say this, it's just, for me, there's still this thing, like, I've plugged in and played them and I'm like, oh yeah, like in a pinch I would use this. But I mean, if I've got a valve head, that it does this thing that I think of as a guitar sound when I want to play guitar, when I want to record it.
I also think if you're, you know, jumping between venues and you don't know what guy you're going to get as a front of house
for
fella,
sure,
like giving him a set of XLRs out of a Torpedo, you know.
Well, okay, exactly.
It's that. You got to protect yourself. And this is, sorry, we got
off topic.
Yeah.
We started ranting about these other things. But yeah, we were talking about Torpedo. I think Torpedo's great because you're plugging a real amp into something and all it's doing is just, it's mimicking the speaker cabinets. For people who don't know, it's like, it's a load box and speaker simulator in a rack. And the thing is really cool sounding. And I remember like a couple tours ago when I was sitting at home and I was practicing some older Cancer Bat songs that we hadn't played in a while off our third or fourth record. And I wanted to just, you know, make sure. I was like, yeah, I haven't played this with the guys in forever. Before we get together and rehearse, I should know my parts, right? So I sat there and I started like tweaking, and I plugged like my Morris straight in, and it's, my studio tone is pretty much with the exception of our last album with Ross, because I didn't have my amps at, in California.
Okay.
I've always used my Diesel Herbert and then this Morris head that I have. And the so I plugged the Morris in right away and, like, you know, kind of tweaked a sound.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started sort of, like, playing along to, like, our own recording, like, something off of Dead Set on Living. And I just was able in a few minutes to, like, nail that sound really close.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, and it just felt good because it's the amp I used.
Mm-hmm.
I think so much of what makes an amp great is the front end of the amplifier, the input section, and the transformers in it, and the way it responds. It just feels right. Mm-hmm. And you get used to hearing that. And yeah, of course, like, you know, nothing's better than standing in front of a loud valve amp and you feel the air push at you.
Yeah.
But when you're recording, you don't usually hear that anyway.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking studio tone, this is it. This does, like, almost everything that I'm looking for when we're miking up amps isolated in another room.
Mm.
And it's just like, yeah, I'm just tweaking it, EQing it, and making it right. And, you know, you find the right models and of cabs, like, you know, the right impulse responses or whatever. Yeah. It's just like it's satisfying. Mm. And I haven't found that in the other digital, products that are coming out for guitarists. Mm. It's just this one really works. And I've got to know Guillaume, who runs Two Notes, and great guy, and, you know, he always comes out to our shows in Montpellier in France, and
mm-hmm.
They've been really cool and helpful when I've needed them and stuff like that, and I back their products 100%.
Mm.
Yeah.
Where's next for producing, and where's next for Bats?
Okay, so for producing, I'm currently in the middle of finishing the Deck Piss record,
mm-hmm.
the Lawless Sons record, and then, I mean, I'm kind of this guy where I've been taking on a lot of different things. There's also this other band in Slovakia that I've been working with who are in the process of changing their name, so I don't know their new name. They okay. used to be called Mama's Knows Best, but okay. they're changing their name after some lineup changes and stuff like that. So I'm working on a record for a band there. I've been doing some stuff like with some bands, like doing pre-production over Skype and cool. working on songs and stuff like that. So... gotta finish up Deck Piss, Lawless Sons, eventually gonna go with this band from Slovakia, and currently doing pre-production with that band Shock Horror.
Mm-hmm. Are you guys writing now?
We're just exactly like Cancer Bats, we're just about to start writing our sixth album.
Brilliant.
Mikey, our drummer, he's just had a baby, and him and his wife like, they've moved out to Winnipeg, which is a 24-hour drive from Toronto, if anyone wants to do that trek to the wintry lands of Winnipeg. But so that's a new dynamic for our band, and we're figuring out how we can make that work. So, you know, he's going to come down in August for a month with his baby and show off his baby to all his Ontario friends where we all live, and, like, we get to hang out, and
that sounds lovely.
Yeah,
that
really does. All the Bats uncles.
Yeah.
You know? But it's cool because then he's gonna have the time, and we're gonna work on songs, and it's exciting. It's crazy to think that, like, you know,
have you set a time for record?
No, not yet. Which is good, because for me, I know what it's like to rush something and how that could go really wrong really quickly. And thankfully that, you know, even when we were kind of rushing, I still felt like we got lucky and the batch of songs we wrote was good. But now we're definitely of the mind of, like, okay, we've written a lot of songs. Mm-hmm. Like, let's make sure that we're putting something really great down. And I mean, we really did that, I think, on the last record, and we were, like, quite happy with how the songwriting went. So we have a bunch of that. This whole idea of having a producer career is fulfilling, like, my love for music in a way that I haven't experienced in my life before, because I've always been, like, a member of a band. So this is kind of my way to, like,
give it
temporarily
back.
Be a member of a band, you know, and it's really satisfying, and it's cool because as I was young, I was always in, like, three different bands that did different kinds of music. I'd be like in an industrial band, a metal band, a more punk band or something. Yeah. And then with Cancer Bats, it was like the first time where I was only in one band in my life. And then that's been the last over 10 years. And now I'm kind of like, you know, itching to make other kinds of music. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm probably not going to make like, you know, like a joke, goofy punk rock record like Deck Piss is, for instance, or something like that, or maybe an extreme metal album like Speaker, because that wouldn't make sense in the realm of Cancer Bats necessarily.
But still being part of that creative process does help exercise.
Well, for sure.
That creative part of you, which is really important.
Yeah, it's the essence of being a musician for me. Yeah. Like, and that's why I love taking that the next step and showing, you know, other people who might not have the same experience that I do and helping them, you know, take their bands to the level of that, you know, I've been at with mine. Yeah.
Well, Scott, thank you ever so much for coming on.
Of course. Thanks for having me, man.
Workshop, and more power to your producing elbow.
Cheers, buddy. Always a pleasure.
Cheers, mate.